I love it. We are back. This is Luca Maino with Learn to Unlearn. We are back. Let's listen to the music a bit more, shall we? My goodness, the eclipse went. The eclipse came and went. Yes, the eclipse came and went, and nothing happened. No, just like the year 2000 came and went, and nothing happened. The end of the world didn't happen. It's still sunny outside. I'm sitting here talking to you. No, we haven't had an earthquake either. Nothing here. For anybody listening in 200 years, this is the 8th, no, not the 8th of April. Yes, it is. Could it be the 4th of August? No, I don't think so. Okay, so it's the 8th of April, 2024. We just had a beautiful lunar eclipse. It was beautiful, okay? I was into stargazing before. But before we get into anything, let's just say hello to everybody first and to say, give honor to our producer, Stever, our producer. How are you doing, Steve?
Good. What am I going to do with all this toilet paper that I bought today?
Oh, yeah. There you go. Good one. Sell it twice the price, three times the price. Yeah. And everybody will be happy to buy it. You watch. Yeah, they'll probably line up and they'll probably say, oh, it's better than all the other ones because he's selling it three times the price. Try four times and then go down. See what happens. See how many morons you can get. Just kidding. WPE yourself. Yeah, there you go. I got to throw in this little joke. I have to. Okay. After I say hello to everybody in the chat, Boston Mark, Sarah, Melissa, hello to everybody. Annie in particular also, because without her, there would be nothing. Right. So thank you to Shake and Wake. Thank you to Rick. Thank you to Rick's music. Thank you to Rick's legacy that has helped me also to become healed, literally, okay? We're going to talk about all kinds of things today. I want to throw in instinct. We're going to throw in some heavy stuff, actually, today. But let's start off with a little cute wink, wink, wink that I'm going to put on the main screen so Steve can watch while we're playing it. And have a listen, because you don't really have to watch. It's just something to really – I laughed when I heard this.
But the serious thing I want to mention, we all know the thing they pulled the last time an election year came around. I have been waiting for another one this year. A virus isn't going to cut it this time. So what's the plan? That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. But I can tell you this, they're running out of time. Now, eclipses happen 2 to 5 times a year. That's every year. They don't cause calamity or earthquakes or even have more than a mild psychological impact. Shooting sounding rockets into the ionosphere happens all the time, and this is not the first time NASA has done it during an eclipse. All of their missions get weird names, by the way. But I would not put shenanigans past the government, especially after living through the last 4 years. I can assure you of this. If something major happens during the eclipse, they did it. I'm just going to say it plainly like that. If something happens, the government did it. That wouldn't shock me. And I'm not talking about a solar flare or something. It is sunspot maximum, so that may even be said to be expected. I'm talking about something major with the grids, the internet, social unrest, military action, etc. If something happens, it was done on purpose and likely to begin interfering with the 2024 election process. Hate to say it, but I said it.
So there you go. Okay. Steve, any comments from you before we go on? I thought that was cute. I just thought you might have something to say on that.
Independent fact checker said that it was true information.
Oh, cute. There he goes. Yep, absolutely. And because everybody's waiting for something to happen, guess what? They're not going to make anything happen. Or, see, they can do anything they want. They can heat up the Madrid fault and just, whoops. They can do absolutely anything they want. So you know what? Why don't we just enjoy our life the way we have it? Not worry about anything before I get yelled at from anybody in the chat. Let's move on, shall we? No, just kidding. Let's move on. I have a beautiful T-shirt that I love with it's a logo of the sun. And inside the logo, it says to struggle for your life. It's kind of hard to transcribe. It's kind of hard to translate from French, but it says se battre pour la vie, you know, to battle for your life, to really rage battle, like to defend yourself, to protect yourself, to stand for something, or you're going to fall for anything, right? As we know, this how the saying goes. But in French, it's more like, you know, no, you have to really battle it out for what you believe in, to stand alone if need be, as I love to say, and as I might say too much. But you have to stand alone, right? If need be, in front of the whole world. And let's just say that this show, you will be privy to, it might not be the first time you heard this, but it definitely is among the first times I have. And that's why it's such an honor to play it on this network for the first time I'll ever do it. Because it's, you know, it's, this is when the conspiracies stop. This is when the, well, if, or well, and, or well, when, well, we're not sure, you know, well, that's what they say. This is what I'm sick of. And this is what makes me stop. If ever I'm starting to work on something and all of a sudden you get into that and it's like, oh, well, you know, what's all this? Oh, no. Okay. Forget it. And I stop. And I've been interested in World War II for a long time, as everybody knows. Okay. And this is going to be a serious segment this week on that, because I have found something that is irrefutable. And sadly, it ties into absolutely, oh, no, not sadly, I take that back. I'm proud to say that it ties into everything that I've been working on in one way, shape, or form. In the case of Sylvia Stoltz, the lawyer, this is a true story, who was, you know, defending the, quote, Holocaust denier, unquote, Ernst Zundel. I've talked about that once or twice before. We need to talk about it again today because there's more, okay? The client that she was defending happens to be, he happened to have spoken, and you know, in those old recordings in the 90s, you have the timer on top and the timer's going. It's one of those from 1995, 1996 that I found. And this is where the ands and the ifs and the buts stop. And it's frightening, okay? And I'm going to be taking it little by little. And if you guys don't like it, we don't have to keep going. But you'll get it, definitely get a taste if you like it or not in the first few segments, because this is stuff I have to, you know, I have to get out before it becomes illegal to speak in the United States. Before it becomes illegal to speak against whatever, okay? It has to come out. So I sat up for quite a while until 4 o'clock in the morning one night writing notes. And I had to go into prayer and meditation because it's like, you know, this is so big. What do I do? Luca, just take notes, write it down. Think of everybody that you're going to be presenting it to while you're doing all the work. And just go. Just go with it. But before we get into that, I would like to throw something at everybody about the eclipse. This is really cute because I'm looking through my notes and I really want to mention this about the eclipse before we move on. If anybody knows about the war of 1812 or 1811 around that time in the United States, in the heart of the United States, in the Ohio River Valley, we have the leader, Tecumseh, the leader of the Shawnee, and his brother, 10 squat away, which he was called when he was a kid, which, you know, he poked his own eye out with an arrow and he was trying to be in competition with his older brother, exactly like me. He has a vision one time. It's a beautiful story. He falls into the fire and has a vision and he becomes 10 squat away, which is the open door. And at that time, William Henry Harrison, who's the president of the United States at the time, they don't know what to do. They're trying to do something like, you know, to get rid of these Indians or do something to, you know, have them fight inside themselves. And this is actually relevant to what you're going to hear about World War II, believe it or not. Their strategy was to either talk the Indian down or get between them and start something so that they, you know, they're not as strong, or disunite them in some way, right? So William Henry Harrison says out loud, he says, if this is such a great leader of yours, have him perform a miracle. And this was right around the total eclipse of 1811, 1812. And 10th Squadaway had predicted the eclipse. And when it happened, well, LOL, there's nothing that William Henry Harrison could have done to unite the tribes more than having said that, because that's what happened. He predicted it, and it happened, and everybody was like, oh, my God, you know, and that's one of the wink-wink stories of the eclipse that I have, because it's a true story. You know, have him perform a miracle, you know, and a couple of days later, bang, that's what happened. So it's really cute, you know, and the Native Americans were so much more plugged into source and to the earth than we are today. We have no idea. And that's what's so beautiful about it. Anyway, I had to throw that in. Also, at the time of the eclipse, listen to this. What does the eclipse represent? Luca forgot to tell you this, too. It means a renewal. Just give me a few minutes to, you know, have this. Let it sink in when I say this. This is what the eclipse means to Native American tribes, whatever. All the tribes thought different ways, okay? But it's a renewal. It's a rebirth. It's an inner journey. Or it could be gatherings of once enemy tribes, like the Green Corn Festival out east with the Wampanoag. They have a Green Corn Festival, it's called, and they invite their enemies to make friendships happen again, to build strengths like they never had before, etc., to start anew in forgiveness. It's a special time of celebration, of cleansing, arf, 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 a reset. Sorry, I had to throw that in. You know, like the wonders of life, right? The good spirit is embraced, and those with bad spirits, they're cast out, or they just cast themselves out of the circle. Get it? By their actions, they just cast themselves out themselves. It's not, you know, nobody has to do anything. They just push them. They alienate themselves by their actions and by their behavior. That's how beautiful that is. So I'm going to get a little drink of something. And you know what? I brought this back because I started doing Learn to Unlearn on this network with this, and I want to bring it back because it's such beautiful music, and it lets us transition from one subject to another. Okay, so where do we start? Well, why don't we start with Sylvia Stoltz, okay? And I really hope this interests you like it interests me, because this is where it all starts. When you have something that you don't feel right about and that you know is true and that you can verify, when you get into that, something happens, okay? The gnawing starts. You start to unpeel the layers, and then all of a sudden, guess what? Right. Okay, so in this case, and bear with me, this won't be too long, but it's absolutely priceless. And I'm going to say this again, because when I ran this by Steve, he wasn't sure of it, and he didn't sound like he remembered it, which made me think, good, I haven't talked about it that much, so I'll say it again, because this is very important to understand the next segment. This is all about Ernst Zündel, or Zündel, his name is. You know, with the U, with the two dots on it, that's U. Ernst Zündel, not Zündel, sorry. Okay, so this qualified lawyer stood up and defended him as a, quote, Holocaust denier. Okay, she made the headlines years ago as a defense attorney, and they just want to briefly explain who they're dealing with, okay? This woman was on trial, you know, sitting next to her client, Ernst Zündel, okay? During the legal proceedings, she provided evidence to the court out loud that would raise doubts regarding the official count of history. This caused furor in the courtroom, okay? So right away, she was prohibited from speaking any further from the judge. The speech ban was ordered as she was presenting the arguments for the defendant, right? She was not allowed to argue the case now. She was barred from listing any more evidence. Okay, so she ignores the speech ban because she knows she can. It's completely illegitimate, and she continued to submit the evidence. Then she's asked a second time. She's threatened, quote, on pain of penalties, unquote, if she persisted. That's the second time. When it came, quote, too much, when it became too much for the authorities, she was arrested right there in the courtroom during her defense of this so-called Holocaust denier, Ernst Zündel. And not even that would silence her, according to this report, as she continued to speak the case of her defendant while being forcibly dragged out of the courtroom. Okay, for this, she was imprisoned for almost 3.5 years, despite her having no previous convictions. She's a lawyer, for God's sake. Arrested in the courtroom, thrown directly in prison. On top of that, she has to face 5 years of Berufsverbot, which means professionally forbidden. She lost her license to work as an attorney, and she was removed from the Association of German Lawyers. Okay. Does that not say a little something? And you know what? I'm going to give you guys that in the chat, which is right here. An attorney who was supposed to defend. Okay, this is how the ADL talks. This is how the Anti-Defamation League, and this is how the people, the Jewish big league people talk. You'll hear the other side now. An attorney who was supposed to defend, listen to the words, a prominent Holocaust denier found herself headed to a German jail in January after calling the extermination of the Jews in World War II, quote, the biggest lie in world history, unquote. Oh, now it's Sylvia Stoltz, known for her courtroom antics. She was convicted of inciting racial hatred and sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. I'll make it quick, because she said to the judge, she said the judges should get the death penalty for offering succor, S-U-C-C-O-R, to the enemy. Succor as in relief or aid, a succor. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. S-U-C-C-O-R, it's a legal term. Offering, she said the judges should get the death penalty for offering aid or relief to the enemy. That's her quote. While she was getting dragged out or whatever. You know what I mean? Okay. So I'm going, you get a judge that angry while you're just talking about you're bringing evidence in. What would anger somebody so much? You know, it doesn't make sense. So your instinct, Luca, what does your instinct say? Well, A, she wouldn't leave Zündel. She wouldn't leave his side. And she had to be physically torn from him and removed from the courtroom. That tells me something a lot right there. She received the maximum prison sentence of 5 years for disputing that the Holocaust is a historical fact. Apparently, it's not, as far as we're looking at. And I'm going to repeat myself. We were lied to about everything. I'm not saying the Holocaust did not happen. I'm saying we were lied to about what happened. As with everything else on the face of the earth, So it's like, okay, well, why don't we look at this a little further? Because, you know, it really looks ugly as far as, you know, for her. So, well, at first, I never thought I'd be able to do this, okay? I never thought I'd be able to find the evidence needed to go over what the trial was about, you know, because all that disappears. Just like the financial records of Germany between 1933 and 1937, I believe, very hard to find, if not impossible, for a very good reason, okay? They have to keep the lie alive. This is what it's all about. This is what I'm finding out, okay? I never thought I'd find what I was able to find in parentheses, okay? And be lucky enough to find the video and be able to take that apart and offer you the bits and pieces of information to show where he stood, bringing a two-hour video down to maybe less than two clips of 6 minutes today for the first hour, which I think is pretty good. You know, ask and you shall receive. This is what it's even in the Bible. Ask and you shall receive. You know, knock and somebody will open. It's all about intent. And intent is hooked up with your instinct. And I'm going to get into that later if I have time. But before the break, we need to hear this. Because, you know, it's one thing talking about it, Luca. It's one thing talking about it, okay? It's something else listening to it from the mouth of the person that was put in jail twice, okay? And this is, you're going to hear from him. This is his court case that started all this furor in the courtroom, okay? It's his, them trying to bury him alive, but they can't because they don't have any proof. They can't because they don't have any order. It's very, very interesting, and it's worth its weight in gold. So I would like to play the first clip, and I might stop it every once in a while because he's, out of all people, he's being interviewed by an Israeli reporter, okay? And I took out the most important parts. So let's roll into this is clip number one.
There's a book out called The Founding Myths of the Israeli State. Mm-hmm. I've got an article here by Yehuda Bauer, Auschwitz, The Dangers of Distortion, in which he talks about the founding myths of the Israeli state and the early Zionists that inflated the numbers in Auschwitz. And now, embarrassingly, they have to reduce them from 4 million to 1.1 million or 1.5 million, depending on whose lies you want to believe. Power is...
Whoa, okay? Remember, before we even found this clip, how many times was I saying, you know, Israel is a fake state? Israel is a fake state. I even read the list of leaders from Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, Poland, remember? Yitzhak Herzog, Ireland, president of Israel coming from Ireland, okay? Israeli defense minister coming from Poland, leader of opposition coming from Serbia, finance minister coming from Ukraine. Hello, Morocco, Iraq, okay? These are all people that are foot soldiers for the Rothschilds. It's very obvious, and he continues. See, so that fits automatically, and that's not even 25 seconds of the video.
Power is about power, you know, whether you're the Stern Gang or somebody else, and murderous thugs are murderous thugs. So you are a state that is also founded in myths, and one of the myths is that you are the persecuted people, you know. I'll tell you that the Jews inflicted as much pain as it was inflicted on them. You have no copyright on pain. Once you're wise to the parasitism reflected, for instance, in these books by Nahum Goldman of how they pulled the wool over the European eyes and got the Germans sucked into the reparation racket, here is the president of the World Jewish Congress, man, spilling it all out. Here are the West German reparations to Israel.
This is, I just want to visualize, that's a book, that's a Nahum Goldman, the Jewish Paradox book.
Jewish Paradox. This one here is one of the most amazing books by Tom Segev.
The 7 Million, the Israelis and the Holocaust by Tom Segev.
Tom Segev.
Did you learn from, I know him very well. Yeah. What did you learn from that book?
What did the unspeakable liar, for instance, Menachem Begin was? That Menachem Begin ran around Israel election campaigning, talking about how he saw his father shot by the river Bug, how the river was red with blood, and then his sister is being interviewed, and she says, Menachem was already gone to the Soviet Union by that time. He wasn't around to see anything. In other words, here's the Prime Minister of Israel, formerly on a wanted poster by the British for being a cutthroat gangster, lying his face off to the people of Israel, agitating them, abusing them. And that's the caliber of leaders that I'm afraid have to give no moral lectures to German people.
See, okay, I'm going to stop it there. Yes, I'm going to give you the link to the video. You have to be very careful. You have to listen very carefully to what he says. It's incredible. And there's so many things that he says so quickly. It's like you have to really pay attention. So already there, Menachem Begin. Did I have him in the list? Watch this. Let's see if we have him in the list. And Stephen can be a witness if we can. Menachem Begin, do I have him? No, I only have Shimon Peres, who is from Poland. Ehud Barak, who is from Lithuania. Ariel Sharon, who's Russian. Ehud Olmert, who's Ukrainian. No, I don't have Menachem Begin's name. Okay, but I mean, I'm pretty sure he wasn't from Israel, you know. So let's keep going.
Whether my generation or my father's generation.
So he's saying, listen, hey, you know, nobody has anything to say, you know, about the Germans anymore, because he knows what the truth is, and he's one of the last ones to know it. Okay. I'm not saying that he has all truth and everything else is a lie. I'm just saying this is something else that is too important not to add into the mix. And when you put this into the mix, then you start to go, oh, as you'll see in a minute here.
Let me give you the case of another Jew, yes. Salomon Morel.
Salomon Morel.
60 Minutes to the show on him. Now, John Sack is a Jew from New York. He wrote this book about this Jewish murderer in Poland that was in charge of a concentration camp after the war, reporting in here how he would beat with table legs these Germans that were under his care to death because he says, they killed my parents in Auschwitz. First of all, the jury is still out if they really did kill him. How the hell did he know him? Did he know that? The fact is that here was a Jew who had power over Germans within... The war wasn't even over when he began his work, and he committed these crimes that in Poland, in this little town where he did his evil deeds. There are over 540 death certificates that he issued himself for people that died in his camp and he was there. Now, the West Germans know that he lives in Tel Aviv. 60 Minutes found him in his apartment in Tel Aviv. Here is the documentation by another Jew. Is there any extradition going on? Do those hypocrites from the Bnei Brith that you just saw about war crimes talk about that case? Of course not. You see, this is the problem. That's why I say that the hypocrisy is the hallmark of the modern Jew, that he talks out of both corners of his mouth, that he wants to persecute Nazi war criminals to the end of time, but will not extradite or go after Jewish war criminals. We had two members of the Knesset come to Toronto in 1967 or 68, bragging in the local synagogue that they were the ones that supplied the poison to poison thousands of SS men who were disarmed and prisoners of war. Their heroic deed was to poison these SS men. Mm-hmm. All right? They became members of the Knesset. Their names were known to the Jewish community. They were on the front page of the Toronto Star. Did the Canadian RCMP investigate that kind of a war crime? These were men that they murdered. They appointed themselves judge, jury, and executioner.
Okay, so this is the kind of stuff that I'm getting into. And if it interests you, I'm really happy that it does. If it doesn't, well, you know, people have probably hung up by now if it doesn't interest them. See, it's so easy to sit there and say, you know, Hitler killed 6 million people and he was a big, mean monster and we had to get rid of him. And my first reaction was, wait now, how come that's all we know about him? And then you find people like this guy. And I'm not saying he's gold and he's right and this and that. No. When we come back from the break, I know Stephen's going to go, Luca, it's time for the break. We're going to finish this one clip. and go to the next one, and you'll understand a little more. And we have to give it time. We have to give it patience. We have to give it understanding, and we have to give it as much leeway as anything else that we're studying. So we'll be right back, folks, and don't go away. I'm going to whet my whistle myself.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
And join the social media revolution. Yes, we should. And hello, Moon. Moon is with us. What I'm presenting today is a very less than obvious side of history that you really have to dig for and that most people are not ready to hear. But for people that are, and I'm so proud of my producer because we talked about this. We talked about it before, and it's, you know, it's nice to have people that are open-minded. It's not necessarily, yes, you have to believe this and this is what I have. And, you know, no, we're all walking on the beach. Okay. And I find this, and I come to you and I say, this is what I found. What do you think? And this is what we're doing. I just found an incredible video that I gave you guys, and I'm surprised that it's still with us. And I have two other ones that I'm dissecting as well. This is we're going to continue with the first clip from Ernst so we can hear the second one. No, I'm going to say this first. He's talking so quickly with the German accent. Maybe people don't understand him. So I want to say this. You're going to hear a quote, a very specific quote from him. And I'd like to read it to you because he loves talking like my grandmother does. And it's very, very difficult to understand what he's okay. No one has ever analyzed why the German nation that had more Nobel Prize winners and more famous researchers and scientists and one of the best educated countries in Europe, why did they turn on the Jews? What happened? Why did these good Germans turn on the Jews? According to him, this is what he said. This is a quote from him, who had more Jews living among them than even percentage-wise live in the United States today. So why? And he says, because the Jews displayed the same voracious ethnocentrism, power grabbing, influence peddling, buying of politicians, dominating of the public airwaves and the public media in Germany at the time, and so on, that they displayed in the United States. See, and he's actually saying at that time in 1996 that, you know, this is what they're going to install in America. This is what's going to happen in America. They're going to install the Weimar Republic just like they did, you know, before Hitler showed up. See, and before Hitler showed up, well, what was up in Germany? Well, Berlin was called Sin City. You know, it depends how long you want to research. For me, look what I found. The first porn flicks came out of Germany under Zionist rule, Weimar Zionist rule, before Hitler, 1870 to 1920s. The first homosexual and or sex with animals movies were produced then. Berlin was called Sin City for a very good reason. This is what Hitler's book burnings were all about, getting rid of all the filth and perversion of the international Zionists, as he calls them, so that, you know, he could purify his nation again, because this is the filth and perversion that they brought in America. This is why we're seeing drag queens. This is why we're seeing pedophilia flags on the White House. This is why we're seeing the men, men, quote unquote, surrounding the president in, you know, in mini skirts or with, you know, 3-inch long white nails, or an admiral that doesn't even know who it or it is. Okay. This is why this is exactly what's going on. This is what Hitler was just getting rid of. And he paid the price. So we're going to continue with this. I'm just going to let him roll because he explains it so much better than I do.
You see, part of this Holocaust problem is that we always start by discussing what the Germans did to the Jews, why Hitler came. The analysis doesn't even go to the point why Hitler came. Why did Hitler convince the majority of Germans to vote for him and to be loyal to his regime? And why this phenomenon that when Germany was lying in ruins and smoldering, burned from end to end by this Allied genocidal bombing campaign, did the German population not turn on its leaders and hang them themselves? There's not a single instant where a German leader of the National Socialist Party, regardless of how bad the war went for them, was ever executed, shot from behind, taken to court, strung up in a village square. Absolutely nothing. It took the Allies 2 years to rig up their kangaroo court in Nuremberg to do these judicial murders.
Whoa. It took them 2 years to fix up their kangaroo court in Nuremberg. Okay? I'd like to add that according to him, in the next clip, you're going to hear him say that not a single gas chamber existed in all of National Socialist Germany. The fetish of gas chambers was an American idea. It was too expensive and it was way too complicated. And they had already blamed Germany for gas chambers in World War I. And that had to be retracted because it was atrocity propaganda. Sorry. See what I mean?
Nobody has ever analyzed why the German nation that had more Nobel Prize winners and more famous researchers and scientists and was one of the best educated countries in Europe turn on the Jews. Why did these good Germans turn on the Jews who had more Jews living amongst them than even percentage-wise living in the United States today? Why was that? Because they displayed the same voracious ethnocentrism, power grabbing, influence peddling, buying of politicians, dominating of the public airwaves and the public media in Germany and so on, that they display in the United States. And I'm not much of a prophet, but that much I can say based on history, that in the United States, mark my word, you will have Weimar conditions and you'll have solutions to the Weimar conditions. It will be very similar to what happened in Germany.
Yeah. See? Because history repeats itself, right? Because nobody's brave enough to speak about it. Because nobody wants to, commit career suicide and talk about stuff that you're not supposed to talk about that sent him to jail twice. I think he said his home almost burnt down or did twice. He was attacked by the Anti-Defamation League and other Jewish high-class, very high-up organizations, as we're going to hear in clip two. And again, if my friends and listeners don't like listening to this, I'll be more gentle from now on. But this, you know, this is what they're cramming down our throats, one side of this story. And it's like, no, I'm sorry. This doesn't work. OK, not for me. We have to see both sides. And it's not a judgment call against the J word. This is not a judgment call. What we're listening to is observations. It's documentations. It's all written out. It's all documented through history. This is what happened. This is what these people did. This is what, you know, Germany was all about. See, this is what I need to find out because I am German by my mother. And that makes me, you know, that makes me part of the Jewish family, not by faith. I mean, I don't practice it, but you know, my mother, matriarchal lineage, decides. So that makes me Jewish. Okay. Even more of a reason to, understand what happened.
Jewish or German?
I'm sorry.
Jewish or German?
Well, German. You know, German, you know, okay, of that time.
Yeah, you misspoke.
Because it was from a Jewish family. It was. We had a lot of money.
Your family?
I'm sorry?
Was a German Jew?
It looks like that's what my family was, yes.
Okay.
Because my grandmother offered me a beautiful brass plate, and I wish I could show you. It's a beautiful brass plate with a carved Rothschild sign on it. It's not the Star of David, okay? It's the Rothschild sign. It's the Israel sign, Rothschild, the red star of the Rothschilds turned blue for the state of Israel. And this is what's so fascinating, too. You're going to get a history lesson. It's not whether you like it or not. It's true. And if it bothers you, then it's meant for you. Because it really floored me. It really bothered me. I tried to write during this second clip you're going to hear, and my hand was shaking. I was like going, oh, yeah? Oh, yeah?
I believe in karma.
Oh, I believe in karma. Oh, that went too quickly. Listen to this.
I believe in karma. I believe in karma. I behave every day knowing that my karma will catch up with me if I were to lie to you and sit here and mealy-mouth tell you stories that in my heart are not true. That's why you as an Israeli whom I never met before, most likely will never meet again, I'm witnessing before my God, my conscience, my concept of philosophy of life, exactly what I feel like, because I hope that history sent you here and that you will go back to wherever you go and say, there is a guy in Canada that has paid the price, being bombed twice, being burned out nearly twice, have been hounded by the Jewish lobby into jail cells after jail cells and court case after court case, and maybe he, our enemy, is holding up a mirror to us that would be very worthwhile to look into. I'm saying to you that Adolf Hitler was an organic outgrowth of Jewish behavior and Jewish ethnocentrism in the heart of Europe.
So Jews invented Hitler, you
know? No, Jews created Hitler.
That's right. See, now he's going to get into anti-Semitism, and I got to rewind this because it's very important. Hitler, he says, according to him, was born through, it's like an organic outgrowth of this, you know, this Jewish ethnocentrism. Like he's an organic matter born from that. And it's like, that's when everything starts. Listen to him.
Behavior and Jewish ethnocentrism.
Hang on a second.
Hang on. That would be very worthwhile to look into.
Okay, right here.
I'm saying to you that Adolf Hitler was an organic outgrowth of Jewish behavior and Jewish ethnocentrism in the heart of Europe.
So Jews invented Hitler.
No.
Jews created Hitler.
Really?
That's right. Because there is no anti-Semitism without Semitism. The one presupposes the other. Anti-Semitism only arises. And I'm not the one who invented that. Look at Theodor Herzl. You know, study Theodor Herzl's concept, you know. And every time when Jews were unhappy and wanted to have a place of their own and express themselves and so on, a reaction set in. Why not? They were, the way they behaved, irritants. And so this is what anti-Semitism means. First there is Semitism, and then there's anti-Semitism, which of course is a misnomer because the Khazars of Eastern Europe are not Semites, but nevertheless we're talking about the propaganda term anti-Semitism. So Hitler was created.
What did Hitler in your mind, in after your research, was there a final solution?
No. The final solution that people talk about, that the Germans had envisioned, was a Europe without Jews through emigration.
That's very important. He says that the Germany that Hitler envisioned was a Germany without Jews through immigration only, not death.
What did Hitler in your mind, in after your research, was there a final solution?
No. The final solution that people talk about, that the Germans had envisioned, was a Europe without Jews through emigration. Every document that I've ever seen points in that direction. And to say that Hitler had this idea of the final solution, I remember Pierre Elliott Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, giving a speech here in Toronto in one of the sports stadiums when he was running for election. and he had the final solution to unemployment. That was to give people work. So he had no plan to gas the unemployed.
And Hitler never had any plan to kill the Jews.
During my 9-year legal trials here in Toronto, reflected in this thick red book here, 12,700 pages for the last trial, 7,000 pages for the previous trial. Raoul Hilberg, Pope of the Holocaust Promotion Lobby, never once could produce a Führer order. Now, Hitler had orders for the euthanasia and everything else that he did. Why should he be afraid not to have an order to do the most important thing? If that's what the Jews say it was the most important thing, that he could get rid of the Jews, he should have proudly made the proclamation, framed it, and have it in every German government office. Why did he care for history not to record that he wanted to exterminate the Jews? But there is no such order. To this day, all these Holocaust hypocrites, to the contrary, not a single Führer order has been found. And to the embarrassment of Raoul Hilberg, who perjured himself in my first trial, in the footnote of his second edition to his book, he removed the idea of a Führer order. You know, not
there
even
was
verbally.
No order.
No order.
Mr.
No
Sander,
plan.
What was
no budget.
Say, no order from Hitler to do anything to kill anyone. Right from the horse's mouth. That's what they brought him to court. You heard him say 12,000 plus pages from the first trial, 7,000 plus pages from the second trial. You should see what the books look like. They're, you know, those little yellow things that you put on every page. Every single book that you see has yellow things sticking out because there's so many footnotes, and he's done his homework. Anyway, let's continue very quickly.
Or did it?
There were cases of Jews being executed. There was a policy of incarceration for certain Jews. Not all Jews. There were over 5,000 Jews alive in the capital of Adolf Hitler's Germany at the end of the Second World War. They got even their food ration cards.
In Berlin.
And they had a functioning synagogue until the Allies bombed it. It was a
bomb. You guys hear that? There was a functioning synagogue. You know, there were over 5,000 Jews in Hitler's Germany, in Berlin or Hitler's Germany. Let's hear that again.
Alive in the...
Whoa.
There was a policy of incarceration for certain Jews.
Not all of them.
Not all Jews.
Right.
There were over 5,000 Jews alive in the capital of Adolf Hitler's Germany
capital.
At the end of the Second World War. They got even their food ration cards.
In Berlin.
And they had a functioning synagogue until the Allies bombed it. It was a rabbi that came in by train from Prague to perform marriages, bar mitzvahs, and so on.
Concentration camps existed?
Of course, but not for Jews. The population of the concentration camps in Germany, in Dachau, for instance, when the Allies took it over, 29th of April 1945, the percentage of Jews in Dachau, which was then touted by Hollywood to be the big extermination camp, was less than 12%. And in Auschwitz, the grotesque numbers that are now being flung about. First, it was 4 million here. Before my trial, see? 4 million people suffered and died here at the hands of the Nazi murderers between the years 1940 and 1945. Uh-huh. And then comes my trial. Well, for 2 weeks, we talked about numbers with Raoul Hilberg and the others. Look, nothing is on the tablets anymore. Because the Poles finally saw the light. A little egged on by a worldwide media campaign through internet, television, satellite, broadcast, radio broadcast, and so on. And now it took them till 1995 to agree on another set of lies.
Another set of lies.
Yeah, right. So now here they say it was 1.5 million, 1.5 million. And in the other articles that I have dug out, we have here Daily Telegraph, Auschwitz death reduced to 1 million.
Yeah. Okay, so why don't we finish that off by saying the numbers that I had found from the Red Cross, all camps combined, 271,307. Okay? From the Red Cross when they came in. And the 6 million number, I'm just going to throw this in because you can do that yourself. If you you go to Google right now and you put 6 million NYT. Put that in, 6 million and then NYT. You're probably going to get a picture that's going to show you that that number goes back to 1869 that I found. And my German friend says, no, it goes back to 1829. Look what I found. He found another one. So, you know, we're having fun trying to, because the number sounds good. You know, 6 million, yeah. Just remember from me, you heard it the first time, if you heard it from me the first time, that they accused Germany of atrocity propaganda, which were gas chambers in World War One. And it had to be retracted. So they do it again in World War II. Look at this now. Maybe I'm going to get into Auschwitz. Maybe that's where I'm going. I have no idea. I didn't really want to get into the Holocaust per se because it was so sensitive. I wanted to get into, you know, why was it set up? What Churchill has done. That's why I started working on Churchill and the genocides that he is responsible for from the beginning of the 20th century. We know them. We've seen them. We've documented them. I know the dates, for God's sake. And then you start to look at Hitler, and Hitler is being called a statesman. Every single head of state or minister that had anything to do with him just loved him to death. He was so proud to shake, you know, LG's hand with two hands bending over from a step above him when he's being brought to Hitler's estate in Austria. See, why aren't we studying that? Why aren't we told that? You know what LG says? You know who LG is? Lloyd George, ex Prime Minister of Britain. Excuse me? Oh, right. The guy that they had to replace with Chamberlain because, yeah, he was a Hitler lover, right? No, they wanted peace. He wanted peace. They wanted war. Okay. And that's what we're going to find out next week, if you guys want. I'm all for it because, see, everything ties in. Whenever people start saying this person is wrong, this person is the bad person, this person, that's always where my antennas go up. It's hang on a minute, you know. Wow. And yeah, you know what? We can even do the math. You know what? I'd even be brave enough to show you my math in the chat. You divide 6 million by the number of years that the camps were supposedly open and the crematoriums were supposedly operational. There were crematoriums, but it wasn't for anything like that. It was for you know, uniforms. It was for clothing. It was for people that did die. Yes. Oh, why did they die? Oh, you find out the Allies bombed the routes and the train routes. And, you know, everybody was trying to destroy Germany and frame Germany at that time, I'm sorry to say. So things start to get a little clearer, right? And, you know, it's kind of funny because I've been put down. I come from a very dysfunctional family. I've lived through a lot of abuse as a kid. And this is like, you know, you know, doesn't that sound familiar? Yeah, Hitler this, Hitler that. Why don't we? Oh, you want to talk about the wars? The World War One that he wanted to go in after being severely wounded. He was upset because he couldn't be placed back in the field to fight with his brothers and sisters. The medals that he won, nobody talks about that. The medals, hello, heroic medals. You know, you don't trash something and then say, oh, okay, next. That's how I started my journey into the Native American world because they were being so trashed and it was so racist and it was so horrifying. So today you got a really good idea of the word Semitism. There is no anti-Semitism without Semitism, huh? I never thought of it that way. He's beautiful with that German accent, just like my grandmother. I love it. You know, I'd listen to him and I could just go to sleep listening to that accent because that's my grandmother talking to me in my ear, you know, telling me she, you know, that was her favorite. Did I say that? So see what I mean? When I started the show, I said, you know, to battle for your life, to make it better. Okay. And, you know, now that I'm at it, okay, I've said this much. Why don't I just tie it up with something else that I talked about before, because we're making fun of crickets and we shouldn't be making fun of crickets, poor little devils. I just had a thought, because in, I think I did say it on this show, but I'm so proud to say it again. Look at COVID, please. Look at what France comes out. The law that France just came out with, thousands and thousands of euro fine and or jail term if you speak publicly about COVID. Okay, whether it came through or not, which it probably did, it does. It's irrelevant. That's what I have. I have a screenshot of that law being either proposed or passed. It escapes me right now. But that there, look at the Holocaust. Every single country directly involved in the Holocaust has laws specifically saying you're not allowed to talk about it publicly. You know, it's always, you know, people are not seeing it. And it's just like Klaus Schwab said, you know, in 5 to 10 years, everything will be fine. Billions will have died. Nobody will clue in because the jabs will have gone down the memory hole. The tests told us everything we need to know, and it's really sad to see that. So, and then I come across this meme that says, you know, but again and again, there comes a time in history when the man who dares to say 2 and 2 make 4 is punished with death. Okay? And that's pretty well what we're looking at. Because anybody who dares say anything like that, I mean, I couldn't have a job 9 to 5 in a very prestigious place or whatever and talk like this at night and have them tie in. No, I would lose my job instantly. We know that. See, and people like Abby Martin, this tears my heart up. Abby Martin, and I've shared it before. She says, for my entire life, I've watched the corporate media sell us war after war, always telling us, you know, who our enemies were. Which countries need saving and which governments should be overthrown. And every single time it turns out they lied. You think they told us the truth about Germany? No, they didn't. And when you start going down the Churchill rabbit hole and then you see how Baruch saved his sorry ASS from drunkardness and, you know, and bankruptcy and sponsors his return into politics. And look what happened. Okay. Germany was just another country on the list. Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Palestine the first time, Kenya. Okay. It's just another make the world England thing all over again. So we have to stand in front of the whole world and say, yes, you were wrong. Unfortunately, you know, if you want to make this a better world, you have to know about the world we live in. That's what learn to unlearn means. I love you all. In the last minute and a half, I'm sorry to throw all this at you like that, but it was thrown at me, and I kind of made things short and took out the less important parts. And I'm really proud that I was able to share it, and I hope you all enjoyed it. And thank you for he talks also. Did we play that? No. Good example, just very quickly.
Play what?
This clip that I'm looking at, he ends with saying, what would have happened if Hitler hadn't shown up when Berlin was Sin City? He said that Germany would have had 3 or 4 years maximum. It would have been a descent into Zionism, filth and perversion, Rothschild usury, debt enslavement, and a welfare state, just like the United States is going to right now. But instead, Germany got 12 years of liberation and freedom. Something to think about until next time. Love you guys. Thank you so much. And time to go already. We'll see you next time. Look at this, 2 seconds. 1 and lift off.